Hello, welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining us from New York City, where he's apparently grown a beard, Tim Bontemps.
Still the remnants of my vacation. By the way, I was with my wife, the great Kay Bond, today, who suddenly became a very invested Kansas City Chiefs fan. I'm sure nobody can guess why.
I saw that Adam Schefter's, and I don't know who tweeted it first, but I saw Adam Schefter's tweet about Taylor Swift. I don't know if it had a photo or whatever, but it had like 4 million views in like 35 minutes. I don't even know if the Chiefs won today. I know the Dolphins scored 70 points. It was the most in the NFL since 66.
The Chiefs won 41-3.
I was going to say, here's a hint. They played the
six.
Band.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I got it.
They won by a lot, and Taylor had a lot to cheer about. Let's put it that way.
Okay. All right. Listen, our boy, 9.2 million, it says now, Jackson, as of 10:30 Eastern on Sunday night. Listen, our guys from Cleveland. Rich Paul's with Adele. Travis Kelce is with Taylor Swift. What do you want me to say? Cleveland boys. What do you want me to say, right? Yes. Very, very desirable.
It's all about Northeast Ohio, as we know.
That's correct. Absolutely. I'm glad you understand it. I don't know if you heard Ryan Day on Saturday night, but it's Ohio against everybody. Nothing's ever gone
sure,
Ohio State.
I play. Sure did. One of the most ridiculous post-game interviews in the history of humankind.
Joining us from Dallas, Texas, Van McMahon.
Howdy, partners. Wendy, did you see how many receiving yards that Travis Kelce had today?
I didn't.
Oh, it was a nice number.
It was a nice number.
All right. Well, I could say other things right now, but I will not.
Oh, not a good day for Dallas Cowboys football either. Rough Sunday.
Oh, well.
So anyway, it was about a year ago this week. Maybe I'm off by a hair. It was about a year ago this week that Mark Spears came on this podcast and with conviction said the Sacramento Kings are making the playoffs. By the way, we've been trying to get Spears on, but the man made the Hall of Fame and he's traveling around. And he's hard to pin down.
Got a lot going on.
You make a prediction like that seals your Hall of Fame fate.
In all honesty, that's exactly the way it happened. He made the prediction. The Kings are off to a great start. He was named to the Hall of Fame. I can't deny that sequence of events. Mm-hmm. And then I remember they started the year off a little rough, maybe like 1-4-ish. And I gave Spears the opportunity to wiggle out of that, and he doubled down. Yes.
Mm-hmm. He quadrupled down. He quadrupled down.
And he made it very clear, not the play-in, the playoff.
Oh, yeah, from the jump.
Then they were a three seed. It wasn't. They didn't sweat it down the stretch.
That's
they didn't
true.
Get out of the first round, but they were a convincing quality playoff team, just like the man predicted.
So we asked the question this season, who's going boom like the Kings and who's going bust? Like the Dallas Mavericks, I guess we would say. A team that was going to maybe make the playoffs, what we don't expect. And a team that misses the playoffs that we don't expect. I'm not going to put you guys on the play-in thing. I'll say if you make the play-in, I'll give you that one.
Actually, bull crap. No, because
we got to say the top eight.
Yeah.
We got to say the top eight.
Top eight. Fine.
Top eight.
Okay, Bontemps, you can start. We'll start with the booms. Who you think, if there's a team out there you think's got a shot, maybe not to repeat the Kings' rise, but could surprise and squeak into that top eight in either conference?
I mean, I feel like I should just say the Thunder, just because I've been
driving
the bandwagon on Che. I suspect that might have been what you were going to say, McMahon.
Yeah, I mean, that to me is the easy one. And not just when you talk about I don't think it's a surprise if they make the playoffs, but I'm talking about a team that can make a significant leap. They are clearly the first one that comes to mind.
Yeah, I mean, we'll get into them when you come up with them. I'll just give somebody else so we get started something different. We talked a lot about Tyrese Haliburton this summer. Obviously played really well with Team USA. I'm really intrigued by the Pacers. Got a really young, interesting team. Obi Toppin coming over is an interesting fit. They are going to fly up and down the court. It should be well suited to his skill set. And I just think Tyrese Haliburton is emerging into a star. Benedict Mathurin had a really impressive rookie year. You know, Buddy Hield is one of the best shooters in the league. We'll see what happens with him as the year goes on. I like Jairus Walker, their first round pick. He's a pretty intriguing.
By the way, Buddy Hield being on the trade block is hardly.
Well, every time Buddy, Buddy's contract is up, there's a lot of noise about Buddy's contract. So I think it's just safe to say this is what happens every couple of years. So
there's been a lot of noise throughout the course of this contract. Traded on once.
He got traded once, and we weren't even sure Indiana was going to keep him.
That's right. So and there was all the stuff with the Lakers and everything else. So the Pacers to me are a really intriguing team. You've got a guy who could potentially be a first or second, potentially all NBA type guard in Tyrese Haliburton, certainly an all NBA caliber guard if he takes especially another step forward. And you look at the East, there's a lot of question marks in the East. A lot of older teams, a lot of teams with potential injury issues. You know, let's see what happens. You know, does Miami make a trade? If not, they might take a little bit of a step back. You know, we'll see if the Knicks can keep up where they were last year. We'll see what happens with James Harden in Philly. We'll see what happens with the injury situation in both Boston and Milwaukee, two really talented but older teams. You know, who knows what's going on in Atlanta, Toronto and Chicago, all over the place for different reasons. You know, I'm not saying Indiana's going to finish second in the East, but you look at those teams at the bottom, to me, Haliburton takes another jump this year. They really go for it. If you told me they're one of the top eight in the East in April, I would not be surprised.
Yeah, that wouldn't shock me at all. You didn't mention Andrew Nembhard, who obviously he had a really good rookie season as well. And I think a lot of this is what are they going to end up being able to do with Hield? And I wonder if Hield's value in the trade market is more as an expiring contract than it is an elite shooter. I don't know that they're going to be able to get like significant draft capital for him. But is there a player who would fit well in Indiana that with the new CBA and other teams trying to get off his contract? That sort of a thing. That'll be interesting. And then Toppin's fit is going to be fascinating. You know, obviously New York, he was kind of stuck in a spot where there was a pretty limited ceiling for him there. But I think that there's a chance that this could be a really good fit for him. You know, Miles Turner is a center who is capable of spacing the floor. You know, I could see them being a fit offensively. And then if you're running pick and roll as an elite leaper and finisher, if you're running the pick and roll with Haliburton, like there's probably going to be some opportunities to eat there. So very curious to see how that, you know, is Toppin just going to be kind of an energy quality bench player, or this is his chance to prove that in the right circumstances he can be a lot more than that.
Well, also did mention Bruce Brown, big pickup for them, gives them some defensive, obviously much better defensive player on the perimeter, should be a really good fit next to Tyrese for the Pacers. And to your point about the Buddy Hield's expiring contract, you got Buddy Hield making just under 20, you got Daniel Tice with a team option for next year making 9. Got TJ McConnell with a non-guaranteed deal next year, making almost 9. So between those three guys, that's $38 million, you know, what? Yeah, somewhere in the mid-30s in expiring contracts. And they're a decent bit under the salary cap. So they got some flexibility to make a move and take on salary that way, potentially trade for a guy, renegotiate and extend them, depending on where they're at. Money wise. So like they have a lot of flexibility to do a lot of stuff to add to this team. And given Tyrese Haliburton is going to be going into a max contract next summer, you know, they're still gonna have a lot of cap space if they just sit where they are around him now. But to your point, McMahon, they are a team that's got a lot of flexibility to do something if a guy pops up that they think fits with Haliburton long term.
Here's the thing about Indiana. They are trying to win. Some of these teams that are down in that zone, it's hard to predict what they're going to do. Like Detroit, I think will be much better this year because Cade Cunningham's going to be back. They traded for some veteran players, et cetera. I think they will be a lot better than the 17-win season. I don't know if they're totally ready to win yet.
They had 18 less wins than Indiana last year. And Indiana was 11th. So I think they'll be better because Cade's there, but that's a long.
Right. Long exactly. But like Indiana, they kind of quasi tanked the last 2 years. They did it kind of under protest. They don't want to do it. They did it because they had to. And I think that they, the moves that they will make, and the, and they will be geared, like they finished 11th. Now they finished 6 games back at Toronto. There was no drama on 10-11 like there was in the West last year. We knew the top 10 were going to be for weeks in the East. So it wasn't like they were right on Toronto's heels, but they finished 11th. They don't have to crawl over, you know, 5 teams. Mm-hmm. And if they make moves during the year, I think the moves will be to get better. Like, they're not going to salary dump Buddy Hield. I'd be stunned if they do. It wouldn't follow along what they've been doing. If they make a Buddy Hield trade, it's going to be because they think it's going to get better. They're not going to do it for 2 second round picks. They would rather have Buddy Hield on their roster and try to make the playoffs, even if he was grinding his teeth a little bit, as opposed to trading him for something that, you know, would help them, their asset base. So in addition to what all the points that you pointed out, I just think this team is going to be going for it. And if they finish 10th, if they literally only move one spot to get the play in and they're able to win, you know, 2 games, they'll have a, that'll be a successful season. They that's what they're looking for, even though I'm sure their aspirations are higher.
Hold on, I got to look at the Pacers' schedule because I got to figure out when they're coming to Dallas, and then I got
82 games.
I got to figure out if they're still invited to have shoot around at Buddy Hield's place in Dallas. He's got like a place with a real nice gym on the property. They had their shoot around there last year. I'm just not sure that they're still going to be invited. Anyways, I'll figure that out on my own time. All righty. I mean, again, I'm going to go Captain Obvious here, and we're going to talk about the Oklahoma City Thunder, who, you know, were a play-in team last year. So they made a jump into that, which basically was, you know, got another really good rookie in Jalen Williams and decided not to tank. They're getting the number 2 overall pick, who just happens to plug, I think, their 2 biggest flaws. That's rim protection and perimeter shooting. I think that the Thunder are pretty widely considered to be a likely playoff team this year. It's an interesting thing, though, because you've got Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who is a first-team All-NBA player, who's clearly good enough to be at least the best player on a contender. You know, you've got Giddey's been really good early in his career. You know, Jalen Williams, last year rookie of the year runner-up. You know, Lu Dort is a proven quality role player, although you'd like him not to dent the rim as much as he does. But Sam Presti does not seem to be in any hurry to fast-track this thing. Matter of fact, forget not, like, he's clearly not in any hurry. They went into this summer.
Should he be? Because I'm wondering if they may need to hit the gas a little bit here.
Well, and that's the thing. I get there. If you're going to say, I would have liked to seen them do something this summer to get, you know, another piece in there to help them really be as competitive as possible right now, then the question is, well, you know, what would that move have been? And my answer is, well, that's why Sam Presti makes a bunch more money than I do. The hell's he?
Well, the thing about their offseason that was interesting was that they took themselves out of a lot of the game with on draft night with the Davis Bertans move.
Right. And that it was a total punt. And listen, they clearly like Casey Wallace. They moved up to 10 to get him. I guess they felt like he might have gone at 11. It seemed like an awfully steep price to take on a bad contract to move up 2 spots.
I don't have a problem with them, by the way, just as an aside. They have so much draft capital. Like, this happened 2 years ago when they paid 3 firsts, although those picks, you know, were protected and everything. They were, quote-unquote, bad firsts. But they paid 3 firsts to get the 11th pick in the draft. Which they used on Osman Jang. If they like a player and it costs them a little bit draft capital wise to move up, go ahead and do it, because I think they sort of play by different rules. Sure. Because they're already out of roster spots, and eventually in a couple of years, like, I don't even know where they're going to fit all these players. So as an aside, if their evaluation system liked Cason Wallace and they felt there was a 11% chance that somebody was going to take him in front of them? Because the thing about trading up, if you know, because this happened the year before when the Knicks were looking to move out of that pick.
All right.
With Dallas is obviously looking to move out of that pick. So if you got a guy on your board and they're the team in front of you is very much selling the pick, it makes that a little bit unsettling. It's another thing if you have a pretty good idea what the team in front of you is going to do. So I don't have a problem with them paying a premium to move up in the draft.
Right, but to be clear, the premium they paid was not in draft picks.
Right, that's right.
This was in taking the contract.
Opportunity cost.
Right. Which the other thing there is, if you're sitting there in the Thunder seat and you're saying, okay, SGA's already paid. Giddy, when he comes up, is going to get paid. Jalen Williams is going to get paid. You hope Chet Holmgren is going to be the kind of player who's going to get paid. You know, maybe spending money, whether it would have been via trade for a long-term contract or, going into free agency, would have been counterproductive this year.
I just think they look at themselves as 1 year away from being in that position, in part because they didn't have last year to evaluate what they would look like with Chet. Right. And I think, you know, we've talked about the Thunder a lot for a lot of different reasons. You mentioned, Brian, their roster spot situation. We were texting about this the other day. Like, they're at 15 guaranteed contracts and they've got Aaron Wiggins and Isaiah Joe, both as non-guaranteed guys. Isaiah Joe, I think we all agree, is all but certainly going to make the team. Aaron Wiggins could make the team. So, I mean, there's guys like Alexei Pokuševski.
If Isaiah Joe, let's say they had to waive Isaiah Joe, and I know we're talking about the Thunder's 15th roster spot on the podcast, our producers would pass out. But, like, I think there'd be like five teams that would put in a waiver claim on him.
A lot more. Yeah.
They did it last year and it paid off for him. By the way, yeah. Poku, no one's going to be perfect as far as draft goes. The Poku pick, when you look at what they gave up to get it, especially because now there's names attached to it, those picks ended up being Emmanuel Quickley and Jalen McDaniels. That's one where it's like, ugh, geez.
Yeah. It also helped them get Chris Paul, and that worked out okay down the road too. So, I mean, there's this stuff all works out. But I think, to me, one of the biggest questions in the league this year is going to be, what does Chet Holmgren look like? And to your point, McMahon, how does he fit with where they're going forward? I think he's got to be a power forward. I don't think you can really play him at center. I think he's a lot like Victor. You can maybe close some games with him at center, but I don't think he could start a lot of games or play him at heavy minutes at center a lot of games. And the other thing is, too, I'm curious to see if he is actually going to be a really good three-point shooter or if he's going to be something less than that. And if the answers to those two questions are he's shooting 38 to 40% from three and he can play center, well, then that opens up a ton of stuff. If he's shooting 33 to 35% and he's playing power forward, then you got to try to find a center that can shoot next to him. You got to try to work some different things. And I would guess that's part of why they were a little patient this summer with what they did, because now they can go into this season, they could figure out what their best lineups are, they could figure out what they need. And then next summer, they've got $75 million in guaranteed salary on their books. They could have a ton of salary cap flexibility. They could go out and basically do whatever they want with their team again. And then you would think, all right, that if they don't do something big next summer, then you start to wonder, okay, like,
well, there is something big. There's something big they can do next summer. And that something big is to sign Shai Gilgeous-Alexander to a supermax, which he's going to have a great chance to be, if he stays healthy this year, to be eligible.
No, he wouldn't be able to sign it yet. It's still too early.
He's 2 years.
He's got 4 years left on his contract. It's only in the second year of he's going into his sixth season in the NBA. So still got to wait a little bit longer.
Listen, but
he'll be eligible for that soon enough, Brian.
They can do a lot of something bigs.
Yep. Like,
every time that we talk about Superstar X who might be available, nobody's better positioned to make that kind of home run swing than the Thunder.
Yep.
And they've been, you know, they've been very patient and deliberate, and they've got this massive stockpile, and the shooting percentage on their first round picks, it's pretty damn high. And like, boy, if you look at that Paul George trade, are you kidding me? The haul that they got back for that.
Yeah.
You talk about just the two things on the top, SGA and Jalen Williams, like, wow. I mean,
it's pretty good.
So they are as well positioned as anybody with just the arsenal of picks that they have, as well as some of the intriguing young players. And like, hey, Bertans might end up being salary filler in some kind of a trade. But then you get into, I'll just throw out guys that we've talked about. Hey, if you're Oklahoma City, do you take a chance on Giannis if he's got 1 year left on his contract? Say this, if Giannis really does want to win, I think he would be awfully well positioned. Now, assuming SGA is completely off the table in any kind of discussions, but like, tell me a duo that would put more fear in the NBA, the NBA as a whole's heart than SGA and Giannis. Are you kidding me? Do you take a swing at an Embiid? Or like,
that would truly be amazing if Giannis forced a trade to Oklahoma City.
Well, I mean, but if you're just putting guys with players, I mean, the dream fit, if we're just playing total fantasy GM, is Embiid. I mean, pick and rolls, yeah. Shea and Embiid popping would be pretty devastating. But before we get too far afield with that, the other thing I think to watch besides Chet is the fit with Shea and the guy you mentioned before, big man, Josh Giddey, who is a really intriguing young player, but not a great shooter. Likes having the ball in his hands a lot, as does Shea. Those are both really primarily on ball guys. It's going to be very interesting to see what that fit looks like. It's also, to me, going to be interesting to see, are they both going to start? Because like, if you start Chet at power forward, you're starting Jalen Williams. It's the other Jalen Williams at center. And the guy who is second or third in rookie of the year voting, wing Jalen Williams, he's going to start. So you start to run out of spots pretty quick.
Well,
so
is Lou Dort starting?
Well, you got Lou Dort too. Is he starting to come off the bench? Like they got six guys for five spots, which is a great problem to have. But this all goes back to the same thing. I think they're going to be really good this year and take a step forward.
The move there is to start Chet at center.
Well, I mean, that is a possible move.
Bontemps, you act like this is 1995, where it's Akeem one night and David Robinson the next, and oh crap, now we got to go east and see Patrick Ewing and Brad Doherty. And like, dude, what centers are you worried about Chet having to defend?
Well, I mean, let me just pull up the standings.
Jokic?
Jokic, yes. Steven Adams, DeAndre Ayton.
If Memphis wants to dump the ball down to Steven Adams,
well, I'm just saying. I think if you're playing Chet inside against legitimate centers, I think he's going to get beat around pretty good, and I think you could struggle there. I don't know. Maybe he'll be great.
DeAndre Ayton's going to pound on him with 14-foot fadeaway turnarounds.
Well, Jonas Valanciunas would not be a fun matchup. Your old pal Rudy Gobert would not be a fun matchup.
Okay, cool. Are those guys posting them up like Valanciunas?
Well,
they want to feed Valanciunas with post ups and take.
Jonas would love it.
I think it's a fair thing to question. Can he hold up for a year as a starting center in the league? I think that's a very fair question to ask. If he can hold up as a starting center and that's what they do and it goes great, then that's a very significant thing and a positive thing in their direction. But like they have a ton of talent. I'm as high on them as anybody. That's why we've talked about them so much. But they do. I think this year for them, I think the reason they've paused in terms of really trying to make a big move now is I think 12 months from now or 8 months from now, when they get to next June, I think we'll have a much better sense of how these pieces fit. And then next summer, to me, is the time when you really try to make some moves to fit this team perfectly around Shea, who at that point, is going to be going into his seventh year in the league, is going to be a year away from being eligible for a supermax, to Brian's point. And all right, it's time for this team to be really becoming a championship contending team and not just a bunch of young guys with potential that certainly looks like it could be that kind of group going forward.
Yeah, and I mean, that's pretty clearly the route that Presti's going with this. Like, this was not the summer that he was going to take his big swings. And, as far as the starting lineup goes, I do think there's a benefit to having a set starting lineup and continuity and all that kind of thing. But, Mark LinkedIn Dagnall is one of these coaches who he ain't telling you this lineup. But until he's got to turn the card in, you know, and so it wouldn't surprise me at all if their lineup is a, you know, night to night off matchup based type of thing. I mean, obviously totally. There's going to be, you know, we can pencil in three guys that'll be in there every night if they're healthy.
Well, and you could do that to massage some egos too, if you're worried about people getting upset. Yeah, you know, it's, we talked about it with Golden State the other day in a totally different context. Like, if you want to try to do that, they have the ability to play a lot of different ways, and then you could do that and sort of try to make everybody happy.
All right, the team, so I think the Thunder are a strong candidate to crack that top, no matter how they go. I would just say Shea is ready to win now. Maybe the team's not ready to win. Shea is ready to win. No, that's not a hot take.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So who's ever up there, whether it's the roofers, Santa, birds, old-timey chimney sweeps, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish. But you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com. Sign up today. Claim based on total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. All right, the team, you know, they technically did make the playoffs last year. And so this isn't exactly like a Kings, you know, situation. But the team that I want to talk about is the Minnesota Timberwolves. Mm-hmm. Well, obviously last year, the Gobert acquisition did not work out. Karl Towns played 29 games, had the illness to start the year, and then the calf injury, which then had a setback. He was barely on the floor. Then they made a major midseason trade, bringing in Mike Conley. I think last year was an absolute total and complete mess. I'm not saying I'm not carrying it over. I'm certainly cognizant and aware of it. I don't think they're the same team basically at all coming into this season. Number one, I think Anthony Edwards is a year older, a year better, and I think is in a position in this league where he significantly can affect winning and losing. Regardless of the fit with Karl Towns and Rudy Gobert, Karl Towns doesn't miss 50 games. They're going to be better. And I think having Mike Conley from training camp onward is a huge positive step. I do question what this team is going to do with their spending, because this is a team that, with Glenn Taylor as the owner, has been at times reluctant to spend, been careful about spending. Allegedly, Mark Lowry will be taking over, I believe, during this next season, where he has, I think, a window in December where he can buy the last tranche of the team. It's taken him years to buy the team. I don't 100% know. And the reason I'm asking this is because they've got to sign Jaden McDaniels. So if you look at this team mm-hmm. and what their roster, what their cost situation is, they're obviously into Gobert for a $200 million contract. They are into Karl Towns for a $200 million contract. They are into Anthony Edwards for a brand new, although I agree it hasn't started yet, $200 million contract. Mm-hmm.
Let me just say it this way. They're over next year's salary cap without Mike Conley under contract. So they don't have a point guard. and without an extension to McDaniels. That's right, as of right now.
And so what do we think Jaden McDaniels, a 6'10 defensive ace who can do a little bit offensively, but is a monster defensively, already one of the best perimeter defenders in the league. What is his value in the market? Who, by the way,
shot 40% on 3.5 three attempts last year. He comes close to repeating that this year.
I mean, he's not signing an extension unless it's nine figures.
Oh yeah, I was going to say I don't think he signs an extension unless you're talking like 120 over 40.
Right. Cam Johnson signed 4 years, $100 million. I think the guarantee is in the mid-90s.
Yeah, I'd be shooting for the Tyler Hero deal if I was him. Yeah, four for 120 at least.
And deal signed last year, 2 years ago. Like, dude, cap going up. It's NBA inflation. You know, you can't compare a player now to a guy who signed a couple of years ago.
So here's one thing I just don't know the answer to. And I've asked this question to a few people. I don't 100% know the answer. Who makes the decision on the Jaden McDaniels contract extension? Is it Glenn Taylor or is it Mark Lurie or is it Tim Connelly? And he's just like, well, we're going to sign it and I'll worry about paying for it later. I mean, and so that's why you hear rumblings about a possible trade here. And you hear like underwater or under the surface rumblings about what they're going to do with Karl Towns. And I don't think it's because they necessarily want to trade Karl Towns. I just think that the possible trade value for Rudy Gobert is lower than right. certainly than what they would want. And so like, and by the way, let's say you do sign Jaden McDaniels. Let's say you come to an agreement with him. Your franchise point guard that you have now is unsecured. I mean, you could certainly extend him, but I mean, forget about a Conley extension discussion. What are you going to do with Jaden McDaniels? So I don't know if this roster is going to remain this quote unquote stock through February, but let's just, for the sake of this discussion, say that this roster for the most part competes this season. And by the way, these financial challenges were one of the reasons why it was mildly surprising that they retained Naz Reid, who is an excellent big man off the bench for them to have. Talk about a third big. I mean, excellent player. They retained him. And then they signed Shake Milton, who I've had many discussions with Bontemps over the years. I don't understand why Shake didn't play more in Philly. Mm-hmm. It seemed like every time I watched him play, he did well and scored.
He's a solid player. He's a very solid player.
There were times when Philly had like, they felt like they had six players and Shake wasn't getting a shake.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was funny. A couple of times I was around Team USA this summer. Great opportunity to hang around guys in a low stress setting before they started losing, you know, that 3.5 weeks before they started losing every game.
Yes. Until it became high stress. Yes.
Right. You know, I heard guys talking. One of the things I definitely heard was guys talking about their contracts to each other. I had the opportunity to be around them when they were talking to each other in ways that media is not around them, talking to them about their contracts, you know, and about how they structured their contracts and, you know, definitely higher level in-depth conversations for bus rides than you would normally think that you would have in the NBA. But anyway, the other thing is I heard Ant talking about Shake. Yeah. And, you know, Ant likes Shake's game. So I don't know how much they're going to steer the court together. But anyway, this team's talent level is not the talent level of a 42-win team. Now, the Western Conference is obviously very competitive. There's a lot of things that have to happen, including health. Also, I think Chris Finch is one of the finest coaches in the league. Chris Finch is not a coach who, I would say, doesn't get the most out of his talent. Obviously, last year, it just didn't work out. Chris Finch swore to me that he believed in playing Karl Towns and Rudy Gobert together in training camp when I visited them.
And we also never really saw it. Like, I'm not saying it's going to work. And obviously they didn't have a great year last year, but like you said, Towns played less than 30 games or he played 30 games or something. Like, that's a pairing that's going to need some time to see what it can look like. And
with
they
no
never
preseason.
Got to see it. Right.
No preseason.
Okay. I like all the excuses. They're cute. and listen, I agree.
Chris, am I making the same mistake that I've made like seven times over with the Timberwolves?
Chris Finch, I agree, is one of the most creative coaches in the league, X's and O's wise. That's one of the things that we said last year as far as, hey, it seems like a funky fit. If any coach is creative enough to figure it out, it would be him. Small sample size, blah, blah, blah. Their offensive rating with those two guys on the floor together, the greatest shooting big man of all time, and Rudy Gobert sharing the floor together, was 106.
And Rudy Gobert. Don't say, I thought you said in Rudy Gobert. And Rudy Gobert.
And. Yeah. And it's Texan for and. 106.2. Fellers,
good.
that would be the worst in the league for a team by more than 2 points per 100 possessions, more than a full bucket per 100
Which
possessions.
Is another reason why there's murmurings about what they're going to do about this if
and
it doesn't work.
Again, small sample size, but not tiny. 529 minutes. They maybe.
Oh, yeah. I'm not, to be clear, I'm not saying this is going to work either.
You mentioned the investment in Naz Reid. Well, that would make a lot of sense if they're moving one of those big guys. And as you said, if they're moving one of those big guys, just the simple value in the trade market would indicate that it would be Cat. Now, on the flip side,
the problem is that if they consider that, they're going to have to dump some salary in that transaction, because otherwise it's, what are we doing?
Well, here's the thing. You trade him this year, you are dumping salary because his I might be mistaken on that.
No, he has not started it yet.
Right. That's what I thought. I thought this was
it being his Supermax extension, which is 4 years and over $200 million, and starts a year from now.
Next year is the year that the Wolves have to have a salary issue.
Right.
Next year.
So you're trading Cat and you can't afford to take back a ton of salary for the reasons that you laid out. So this year, Cat's number, as I go to look at it, is $36 million. That jumps to $49 million next year. And at the end of that deal, it's $61 million.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm not entirely sure. For as talented a player as Karl Towns is, I'm not sure how much trade value he has with 5 years and $250 million on his contract, which is what he's got right now. It's one of many big questions they've got, and it's why they need to have a good year. Like, it's a big year for them on a lot of fronts.
I think it's kind of like what the Blazers might be dealing with a little bit with Damian Lillard, in the sense of, man, especially with this new CBA, like, boy, taking a contract like that, you've got to
have a very specific need on your team and a very specific fit for that to work and for you to want to take on that kind of money. It's just like the Dame thing, because Carl is a very talented player with very specific skills and some very specific weaknesses like Dame. And it can be tricky to manage around that. But all that being said, this year they have a lot of talent and they're a much better team than they were at the start of last year with Mike Conley instead of D'Angelo Russell. I think we all agree on that. And as Brian said, Rudy Gobert was not really around all training camp last year. They should be all ready to go for training camp this time around. It's a big put up or shut up year for them. Like, they jump up in the top four, they look really good. All right, then we'll see where this thing goes from here. If they're struggling to make the playoffs again, they're in the play-in, something like that, they finish 11th, which wouldn't be insane with how deep the West is.
Yeah.
Then you're going to be going, well, we're already into the luxury tax to just try to have a semblance of a starting five. That ain't going to work in Minnesota. Like, there's going to be some significant changes. So, for their sake, Brian, they're going to be hoping that you're right.
Yeah. With none of your own draft capital, is kindling to
I was going to say, you guys know how Bontemps and I feel about Anthony Edwards. And I think Jaden McDaniels is an excellent, excellent player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was an all defense home for me last year. They have all the pieces to be a really good team.
Mike Conley is
just got to find other ways for him to exit the court, because you can't have him going through that tunnel.
Yeah, we got to check on that hand at training camp next week. Mike Conley's just a winner.
Yeah.
Right. He's a winner. So there's a lot on this table here that points in one direction. And I don't want to spend too much time focusing on worrying about their salary cap in a year, but you know, that's gotta be a part of
it. It's just a huge year for them. Like they have to be the kind of team you're talking about. Like, for where they're at and the kind of money they're spending, and where everything sits. And
like Sacramento, they never have been. Like, they've had little flashes, more than Sac, but they've had little flashes and haven't had
any. I'm going to double check this right now, but I believe in the entire history of their franchise, they have won a playoff series in exactly one season. I'm going to check right now to make sure.
I think they made the Western Conference Finals one year. I think that was the only
Kevin Garnett. That's right. They've won two playoff series ever. That was in 2004 when Kevin Garnett got them to the Western Conference Finals.
And Sam Cassell, Latrell Sprewell.
And up until the last couple years, they hadn't made the playoffs ever when Kevin Garnett wasn't on the team in their entire existence.
They need Ant to do a whole lot of them Sam Cassell dances this year, baby.
And he might too. Like, we talked about Tyrese Halliburton earlier. We spent a lot of time this summer talking about Ant. Like, he could take a huge jump. We could be talking about him as a, you know, if the Wolves are second or third in the West this year, which I think is possible on the high end, then Ant's going to be right there in the MVP discussion. Like, because he's going to be, you would certainly think if they're that good or in the top four, it's going to be because he's the one driving it along.
MVP discussion. Was De'Aaron Fox in the MVP discussion last year?
Well, I would say Anthony Edwards will come into the season with more cachet and be seen as a higher ceiling guy than De'Aaron Fox. Also, he had Fox and Sabonis both sort of drafting off each other for that because they were sort of a 1A and 1B. I don't think there's a 1B.
We just talked about Cat with the Supermax contract, and he ain't the one to be now.
Do you think Cat's going to get MVP votes?
I do not.
I think Cat's a really good player, but I don't think he's going to get MVP votes.
Do you think Cat would consider him to be not even 1B material? That's an interesting.
I think the Wolves will be happy regardless if they're having anybody get MVP votes. Let's put it that way.
You know, Ant just got a mural in Atlanta.
Oh, looked like quite a party. I saw some of the pictures and videos from that. He looked like he was having a great time.
Once you reach mural status, buddy.
Hey, you got a signature shoe too. Adidas saw a signature shoe online this week. You know, not particularly suited to my taste, but I don't believe I'm the target demographic.
I have no idea when, like, sometimes I see shoes get announced and people are like, that's fire. And I'm like, oh, okay. And other times I see shoes get announced and I'm like, oh, okay. And they're like, oh my God, that's trash. And I'm like, oh, I'm in big trouble because they both look the same to me. So I have no idea what stuff. Oh, here's what I know. I know that if I was 1995 me, I would be a fan of Anthony Edwards.
No, he's fun as hell to watch play. You kidding me?
That's what I know.
Yeah, he's got all the makings of, you know, big time superstar type of dude. No doubt about it.
I know that if, you know, I don't know if I would have been savvy enough to pick out the shoe, but I would have. By the way, this just tells you, and people can make fun of me if they want on this. One of my favorite shoes I ever saw was Gilbert Arenas' shoe with Adidas. I thought his shoes were sweet. Circa 2004. Five.
You know what's great? All the shoes like that I wore growing up, you still wear them. Like the classic Jordans, the Chucks, like the, you know, Adidas Gazelles and stuff. Like they're timeless. So I still get to wear the same type of shoes I wore as a kid.
Air Monarchs.
No. Wendy, I think you're an Air Monarch type. I've never put a pair of Air Monarchs on my feet. I don't want to say never will.
How dare you? How dare you accuse me of owning Air Monarchs? How dare you? You take that back.
You might have some of those Skechers.
You take like, that.
You're like Snoop Dogg. You sold out and went with Skechers.
Right now, right now I'm wearing Roger Federer's On shoes at this very moment.
Right now, all right. There's slippers that are probably in need of being replaced and have a bunch of the fur worn out on them, but they're comfy.
Sure, they smell great. We had Ohm on like last week, and just like, you know, I can't help but look into that back wall. And
so, you know Ohm's thing last season was he never wore the same pair of shoes to two games.
Yep.
So Ohm has.
Wait a minute. Hold on.
Like Ohm would wear a pair of shoes.
Yeah. Brian's not on Instagram. He doesn't need, he's on Instagram, but isn't on it. So he doesn't know this.
Ohm wears, you know, pair of kicks, do his little court side, you know, take a picture of his kicks, post it on Instagram. I don't know how many games Ohm covered last year, but he never wore the same pair of kicks twice.
So did he like, I know I obviously could just have asked him this. Is he writing like a post-it note? Like,
oh yeah.
November 17th. I can't wear those.
No, game 73 kicks, season one finale. Game 73 kicks, NBA Finals game 5 edition. Air Jordan 11 retro low, quote, closing ceremony, end quote. Made it through an entire season using a different pair of kicks every game.
Brother.
Most definitely to be continued next season, with likely enough to fill the entire season of more kicks I wear this season or the second or third pair of some shoes I have. I haven't even bust out many of my Air Max kicks. And it goes on from there.
This is the question I have. And again, I wish I was on with him.
Well, you can ask him next time he's on the pod.
When he says, like, you know, so he wears 73 different pairs of shoes. Mm-hmm. Does he have the exact same duplicates of shoes that he's wearing twice?
No.
Different... No.
He wears 73 different colorways.
Yeah, I mean, like there might be some of the same models. Like he might have worn a few, you know, a few different, like just for example.
I don't think LeBron's doing that. But I'm sure he's wearing 73 different actual pairs, but I don't think LeBron's. In fact, LeBron played like 52 games last year. Oh, more shoes last year than LeBron did.
Yeah, that's but LeBron has to wear. LeBron has to wear the new LeBrons pretty much every single game. Where Ohm's got, you know, I don't believe. He can.
That's true. I agree. Of course, I agree with you. I'm just saying, Ohm wore significantly more different pairs of shoes than LeBron James.
Has a million pairs. PJ Tucker of the ESPN NBA reporter group.
I think he's just the PJ Tucker of the NBA reporter group, period. I think you can go beyond our group. I don't think anybody's keeping up with him. Might be some who try, but nobody's going to Ohm's likes.
Yeah, Ohm's definitely got some PJ Tucker in him.
Sounds like a pod topic for you down the road, Brian.
I guess I'm just so ignorant of all of it, I'd make a fool of myself. I probably made a fool of myself three or four times.
Next time you have Ohm on, you can ask him and he'll tell you all of this is what I bet.
I'm still telling you about it.
I like it better when he's not here because I like my sense of awe. Like I can't compute it. All right.
We're going to get Wendy a shoe deal. I'm telling you, we'll get a shoe deal, Wendy.
Fire, not fire.
I just don't know. They made me put on those off-whites for that one. If you want to see something ridiculous, you Google, if you Google, is this fire in my name? We did a little segment like 5 years ago.
Please Google it and go watch it. It is amazing. It's a couple minutes of your time. It's well worth it. It's unbelievable video.
Yeah. Also, we did another thing one time where I went shopping with Kyle Kuzma and he tried to pretend like he wasn't clowning on me every 3 seconds. Like he like went over the top to not like he was like, he's like, you know, this movie Swingers, the fangs and the claws, like he could have eviscerated me 13 times a minute, but he was like treating me like a child. Like, it's okay. It's okay.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
The NFL schedule drops this week, and you can be there to catch all the action live and in person with Vivid Seats. Experience every touchdown, every tackle, every eye-popping play of your favorite team. And to kick it off, Vivid Seats, the official ticketing partner of ESPN, is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP. Download the app or visit vividseats.com today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call or click Grainger.com or just stop by. Okay. Let's pivot. Do we think any teams, McMahon, I'll start with you, since out of the Dallas Mavericks vein, do we think anybody's going full Maverick in 23-24, going from what we thought was a guaranteed playoff team to sitting at home by the second week of April?
Well, I would say that the Mavericks better have a boomerang on that thing, or there's going to be some serious problems, but that's not what you asked me. The team that I would be most concerned about that is also another team that I happen to spend a whole lot of time around.
And now, this is the team I thought we were going to talk about.
Yep, I'm going to see these folks at Media Day for the next few days afterwards. I mean, look, there's a lot that's gone on in Memphis, and very much of it has not been good. You're not going to have Ja Morant for at least 25 games, hopefully only 25 games. You know, we'll see how that plays out. And you could say, hey, look at the Grizzlies' record without Ja Morant over the last few years. And I'd say, yeah. And the primary reason for that success now is wearing a Washington Wizards uniform in Tyus Jones. And look, we all have a ton of respect for Marcus Smart, a man who managed to graduate from a high school that I got kicked out of. So no question that this guy is a high character individual.
Which one?
I only got kicked out of one. And technically, okay, I withdrew, but the writing was on the wall.
He resigned. He was not fired.
Yeah. It was one of those type of deals. But like Marcus Smart is not the organized, run your team, run the system kind of point guard that Tyus Jones was, which is one of the big reasons that they had so much success without Ja Morant. Now, clearly, Marcus Smart is an elite defender. I mean, hey, recent former defense player of the year. But in that sense, he has to replace Dylan Brooks. So there's a lot on him. You're asking him to replace two of the most important players on the Grizzlies over the last few years. And then this team's not going to have Ja for at least 25 games. I just think that, or I would be concerned that there is kind of a cumulative toll to all the drama and all the nonsense that's swirling around Ja on this team. Honestly, how could there not be? So, you look especially like the top six in each conference, and I would say that certainly they are the most in jeopardy of that kind of a fall.
I'm going to push back pretty strongly on Marcus. If you go back and look at the Celtics the past few years, their offense has been at its best when Marcus has been running the point for them and moving the ball around. He was their best passer. When he was out there, their offense would be in pretty good sync and pretty good rhythm. I think he's going to be just fine running their offense. He's always been, I think, a pretty underrated distributor and point guard. I think, to your point, having to take on the load of also being Tyus Jones and Dylan Brooks, I think could be a lot. They've also got a pretty talented team. They're going to have a chip on their shoulder to make up for John not being there. And it's the first third of the season. Like I think we all expect him to be back when that suspension's over. Maybe he won't be. I think the better argument for them having a fall is there a wear and tear effect from everything that's gone on in the past couple of years? And does that just sort of catch up with them all at once?
I think you are underestimating how good of a run your team, run the show point guard.
I think Tyus is really good.
Marcus Smart is you know, he's solid as a point guard. He's a kind of a combo guard who can play point. Tyus Jones leads the league in turnover or assist to turnover rate on an annual basis.
No, Tyus, I think Tyus Marcus is really Smart good. Don't not. Get me wrong. Well, I think Tyus is really good. It's no slight on him. I just think Marcus is also underrated as a point guard. And I think he has been for a long time. And certainly, if you ask Marcus, Marcus will tell you he thinks he's
well, been underrated. Well, he won that job. It took him years. Yes. But eventually he did win that job, and they were very good with him in that job. Here's the one thing that I would say about the Grizzlies. Where's Desmond Bane at health-wise? I mean, he gave a interview. He did a charity event about a month ago, maybe 6 weeks ago, and he wasn't cleared for contact yet. I'm not saying that wasn't on schedule. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying that, you know, he had a significant, he had a foot surgery. I'm not saying he's not going to be ready or anything, but like he probably had the majority of the summer where he wasn't able to be himself. So, you know, like it's not a big deal if he's not 100% day one. He doesn't have to be 100% day one, but you know, they're going to need him, especially to score. And so I do have a question about where he's going to be physically for that time when Ja is out. Well, and he may be totally fine. I'm just asking.
Yeah, and they need Bane, who, you know, to his credit, Desmond Bane has gotten significantly better each season. And last year, despite playing most of the season with that toe injury, missing a month or so and then coming back, you know, he had basically a 21.5 point per game. And, I mean, we're talking about 48, 41, 88 shooting splits, but they need him to take another leap. You know, they're not going to have Brandon Clark for at least a large chunk of the season.
Yeah,
that really was a blow to them last season. It kind of got lost in all the other stuff, but that was a significant loss to them last season.
Do we know if they have Steven Adams either?
I believe he is going to be good to go at the start of camp, but we will see. You know, obviously they thought they were going to get him back last year, and then it just never got right. That's another concern. You know, I don't know, especially for the first 25. I am assuming, and I don't know this for certain, but I am assuming when and if Ja's back that they'll probably start three guards with Marcus Smart in the lineup next to John Bane. I don't know how they're going to fill the starting three spot in the meantime. Maybe it's Luke Kennard who and just say, hey, with Kennard and Bane, we're just going to be one of the best shooting teams, or have, at least have one of the best shooting tandems in the league, and then have.
By the way, real quick, Taylor Jenkins gave an interview with him last week to NBA.com where he said he thought Steven Adams would be ready to go for the start of training camp.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't necessarily mean he's A-OK. I'm just wanted to add that.
Yeah. And then they need some of these other young players to come along. Like, you know, David Roddy showed some things last year. It'd be really nice if he could establish himself as a, you know, legitimate quality rotation player. Zaire Williams.
What's David Roddy's nickname? I forget.
Big Body Roddy.
Yeah. It's a good one.
Yeah. Zaire Williams showed a lot of things as a rookie, and then last year was just kind of a lost season for him. You know, we'll see. Like I said, there's definitely some talent on this team. I would still describe Bane and Jaren Jackson Jr. as ascending star type of talents. I just think that they are in danger of taking a downturn.
Yeah, there's a lot of, you just listed off a lot of stuff, right? I mean, there's certainly ample reason to wonder. I just think it's less about the ties. I just was saying about Marcus because I think he's a little underrated. I think certainly between Steven Adams injury questions, Brandon Clark injury questions, no Ja, you know, Dylan Brooks for his fault is a really good perimeter defender. They got a lot of questions with one of those. Can any of those young guys step up and play heavy minutes at the three? Like, there's a lot of stuff there for them to answer. And as we've talked about a bunch, the West is really tough.
Yep.
I will say they had quite a few things happen to them last year. Nothing of this magnitude. They had a lot of difficult situations thrown at them, and they won 51 games and had the two seed.
Yeah.
So it's not necessarily apples to apples, but they had, you know, you mentioned their record without Ja before, but this team has shown a level of resilience. And it's not like they're going to be surprised that they're going to be out with, without Ja Morant. They have known and can able to plan it. I looked at their schedule trying to judge like what it might look like. I didn't really come away with any like they don't have like a 9-game road trip or anything like that or something that they'd have to survive without him.
Yeah, and, you know, the other thing though, you know, especially with Marcus Smart being there, is it's like they're going to have training camp going into those first 25 games of the season. And then it's going to be this massive adjustment, basically one third of the way into the season, you know, especially for Marcus Smart, where he's going to be going front. And he'll still, I would assume, you know, get time at point guard, whatever it is, 14, 16 minutes of point guard a game when Ja's not on the floor. But he's going to have to, like, completely adapt to the guy who everything's going to revolve around being dropped in on the roster a third of the way into the season.
I can't remember. Is Ja allowed to practice with them?
No.
Yeah, he's not. He's not allowed to be.
Not allowed to do anything.
Yeah. So, you know, we'll see if there's any kind of leeway given by the NBA. But he's not allowed to play in preseason games. None of that stuff.
Now that I knew. Like, can he work out with them right now?
There's. I mean, I think he technically can right now because nobody's technically supposed to be doing stuff right now. I was talking
to an agent this week.
I'm talking out of school on that though, because I don't know for sure.
Okay. I was talking to an agent this week and he was saying, this team has already had like pretty much full practices for like 2 weeks now. And his client was, you know what? I'm not even going to say. I mean, look, it's not the NCAA. They're allowed, they can do whatever they want. But I heard, you know, there's some teams that have been pretty much fully practicing for a while now.
You know, I honestly, the practice thing, I would need to get some clarification. I'm looking at the.
I was just looking it up too. Yeah. Before he returns to play, he will be ineligible to participate in any public league or team activities, including preseason games during the course of his suspension.
Public, but not private.
Yeah.
I wonder. I mean, these are some of the things that you can ask the Grizzlies next week, McMahon. You know, like.
Yeah. I mean, is he going to be practicing? I mean, maybe he can practice for the next 2 months. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think I remember this being a discussion point on when the edict came down, and it was like, do you really want to leave Ja out in the cold? This is when you kind of want to have him with the team, like togetherness,
as structure as possible, for sure.
I guess we'll get those answers. I seem to remember that there was maybe some where there wasn't clarity on this back when it came down in late June. So. Okay, Bontemps, do you have a team?
Yeah, I was debating trying to be really splashy and go with Phoenix or the Lakers or somebody and stir a lot of things up.
Yes, please go with the Lakers, yes.
No, we're going to retrofit this podcast. I'm not. Those teams obviously have injury questions, but I'm not going to do that.
I'm going to go with the team. Lakers. No, he was going to go Lakers, and then they signed Christian Wood.
Oh, then it was all off. I couldn't do it then. I'm going to go with the team we started all this with. I'm going to go with the Sacramento Kings. I hope I'm wrong because I love their fans, and they had such an awesome season last year. They also had a very charmed season last year. They had basically get hurt all year. I mean, obviously, Domantas Sabonis played through the thumb thing, but he's able to play. De'Aaron Fox had a career year, particularly shooting the ball, shot like 6 points better from 2-point range than he ever has, shot like almost 60% on twos. Not sure he's going to be able to do that again. They're pretty thin across the board. If either he or Sabonis misses any time, they're in a lot of trouble. And also just the West is really deep and really good. And if you ask me to put odds on, are they going to repeat what they did last year and be in the top four again? Or are they going to finish 9th to 11th? I think it's a lot more likely they finish 9th to 11th than if they finish in the top four. But I do genuinely hope I'm wrong on that, because they were an awesome story last year and super fun to watch. And I loved how they attacked the series against the Warriors and kept sticking to their guns and playing the way they wanted to. We talked to Mike Brown about that on our podcast with him during the finals. I just think there's going to be a bit of a reality check with the group they've got. And, you know, some of the stuff that went so well for them last year is probably going to revert back a little bit.
Tell you what, between us trying to bench Chris Paul and you bouncing Mike Brown's king,
we're never going to get it. Nobody's going to come back.
We're never getting a guest on this pod again. I can guarantee that. My goodness. You know, the other thing with the Kings is they were a bad defensive team last year. They ranked 24th in the league. And I'm going to tell you the teams that rank below them, and you can tell me what these teams all had in common. Mavericks, Pacers, Pistons, Trailblazers, Rockets, Spurs. You know what they all had in common?
Didn't make the playoffs.
They were Cancun-ing by the time the play-in came around. Not just didn't make the playoffs, didn't make the play-in.
True. So
it's hard to win when you're a bad defensive team. Now, look, the Kings did it because they were an elite, like a historically elite offensive team. They had the best clutch player, the Cajones factor, Jerry West player of the year, whatever the hell that thing's called. But yeah, it's a tough way to go about business if you don't get stops.
And that, by the way, that stuff tends to not carry over year to year. There tends to be regression of the mean on that front too. And, you know, we haven't had the Jerry West award in the past. Maybe De'Aaron will have another incredible year and win it again this year if he plays anything like he did last year. But over time, that stuff does tend to balance out. And if it balances out at all, the Kings are going to lose some more games.
When do you
get like this is like, I feel like this is low-key slander on Domantas Sabonis.
No, you know what just happened, though? He said regression of the mean. He heard you had Pelton on in our place. He's a nerd, too. Go on with Sabonis. We've never had Sabonis slander on this pod before.
He got his big extension. I actually believe the Kings are going to you guys' points are very fair. And there is something weird about clutch play that it doesn't tend to carry over team-wide. Yeah. And De'Aaron Fox could still be awesome and make the All-NBA team this year and still not be as good in the clutch just because there's some variance to that level of play. Mm-hmm. Having said that, I actually believe in the Kings because I gave 15 different reasons why I was skeptical about them. And then they looked really good against the Warriors when the pressure came on. And even though that was disappointing, I think that they will build from that. I also just know, you know, because I know Mike Brown and I know Jordy Fernandez, their coaching staff, those guys, I think on a personal level, who I don't think they BS, I think they believe that there's more there. They don't think that they hit their full stride.
You could see that. You could hear that just hearing Mike on our pod a couple months ago. I mean, he clearly believes in it. And what I will say is with how young their group is, you look at a lot of these other teams, Golden State, Phoenix, the Lakers, the Clippers, like those teams probably have more high-end talent than the Kings. But if, again, the Kings were very healthy last year, maybe they won't be as healthy this year. But if you were going down the list and betting, are the Kings going to be healthier than all these different teams? They got a good chance to have these guys be out there. And if they are out there on a regular basis, then that will be a big advantage for them.
And, well, look, your strong point that you could make, the Kings won 48 games. The Lakers won 43. That was the difference between the three seed and the seven seed was, five games. So, like, let's just say De'Aaron Fox is good in the clutch, not over the top great, best player in the league. Like it's not, you're not saying they're gonna win 17 games. Like no, I mean, no.
And the West is really good.
I think Zach could have just as good of a season and have the sixth seed. I mean, it's not, but I actually think there's more there. I was one of the people that was rolling my eyes at Spears. I mean, I assume they would be better, but they genuinely impressed me. When I was looking for reasons not to believe in them, they kept giving me reasons to believe in them.
Well, and people in Sacramento probably are screaming, hey, you don't think Keegan Murray's going to take steps forward in the second season? Like, he had a very good rookie season. And if he takes a leap, like,
for sure,
that could you know, a lot of these things we're talking about could come into play. And if he takes,
well, here's the thing, Monty McNair had a chance to improve this roster and basically said, we're going to reinvest in what we have.
Right.
And if the Kings aren't as good this year, that'll happen. But the people who run that organization believe they've got something there. And those guys are not without talent. So,
and I thought about saying the Nets, but I just think
That's the team I'm going to say. That's the team I'm going to say. I'm going to say this about the Nets. I like where the Nets are going. I was, you know, at times, you know, if you listen to this pod, disgusted with the way the Nets handled their business over the last couple of years. The trades that they made for Durant and Kyrie were excellent trades in terms of what they were dealing with and what they were able to accomplish. Yeah. They are in position to get better. And I think Mikal Bridges is a potential all-NBA player. I think he's good enough. I think he's already one of the league's set 5 to 7 best defensive players. And I think he's got enough in there offensively where he can be such a two-way force that he can make the all-NBA team. Having said that, I think they were 13-17 after the trade last year.
I was just gonna say that was why I didn't pick them, because they were a bad team after the trade, and they're more or less the same team again. And it'd be hard to expect them to be in the top eight as of now, despite the fact that they finished sixth.
And you know, the thing with the whole super team that didn't pan out, like, dude, you would sign the KD, Kyrie, even with the dude who was sleeping on their couch, the 7-footer sleeping on the couch. you would do that again in a heartbeat. And you know what? They're not worse off for doing it because of the haul that they did get for KD. Especially given the clear red flags that diminished his value in the trade market, they got a pretty good return for Kyrie. The draft capital with the 2029 unprotected pick, with all the picks, 2029 for the Mavericks, all the picks from the Suns. The one that really has it just killed the Nets is the Harden deal. The Harden deal, getting him from Houston.
Yeah. I mean, it, I am guilty of when I don't even consider Ben Simmons. Well, like, I don't, like, when I look at them, I don't even consider him, because how can I don't even know. Like,
until we see him, you can't. Him. Yeah.
No. And the Harden deal, they gave up all that draft capital, and then they got stuck with this albatross of a contract. And that's what he is right now. And Ben Simmons, he's an albatross of a contract.
Hey, look, we talked about it when Spears wrote that story about him a few weeks ago and went down to Miami and talked to him. I mean, I hope we see Ben Simmons out there playing well again. He was always a guy I really enjoyed watching play. He's a really unique player in a lot of ways and was really fun to watch. I hope we get to see that guy again. But until we see him out there on a consistent basis playing at that level, you just can't. You have to assume he's going to be what he was last year, which is a pretty bad NBA player. Yeah, when he's available, which wasn't very often.
It would shock nobody if the Nets made some deals this season that were about 2 or 3 years down the road. It would shock nobody.
To that point, the Nets have almost nothing on their books for the 25-26 season, 2 years from now. That's now, great. I think that they will try to extend Mikal Bridges. He is already signed for that year, but he's at a very good number for that year, $24 million. I just want to point something out real quick about the way they structured Cam Johnson's contract. It's a quasi descending contract. We often see teams that are not super worried about in immediate cap space do this.
Yeah.
But Cam Johnson's contract goes down 2 years and then goes back up after 25-26. Like it starts, I'll just give you the numbers. It starts at 25-6. Then it goes to 23-6. Then it goes to 21-5 in that 25-26 window. And then it goes back up. Now, why would they do that? Ooh. Why would they do that?
Yeah, now, hold on. You got to get both the hands. Come on.
Because
now.
I think.
Don't give a half.
I also think it's interesting that there's been some rumblings about them possibly willing to move on Dorian Finney-Smith, who's potentially under contract for that year.
And would have value in the trade market. Like, I think you can get a pick there.
There's 35 different roster decisions they have to make between now and then. But that Cam Johnson contract structure is the tell that the Nets want to maximize cap space in 25-26 when we have some possible free agents, including Giannis. Now, Giannis may have had his future already settled by then. He may resign in Milwaukee. I'm just saying, of all the transactions and everything that came through this summer, that didn't get a lot of attention, and I just thought that was interesting, the way they structured that contract, which was to maximize the maneuverability in that year. And, you know, by 25-26, I think Mikal Bridges could be an All-NBA player. That, with where the cap is going to be, having Mikal Bridges at 24-9 could end up being humongous.
They could have the money to sign Donovan Mitchell and Giannis in that sort of world if they wanted to. I mean, they'll definitely have the flexibility to do a lot of stuff, potentially.
The other thing about Mikal Bridges is he is the kind of player that other stars would be eager to play with, right? Because, I mean, he's showing what he can do offensively. Like, he was a good offensive player in Phoenix. In Brooklyn, he's had a chance to really kind of be, you know, on a stage, ball in his hand, that sort of thing. He's showing his capabilities there. But, you know, you're talking about one of, if not the best defensive wing in the NBA, and a guy who's has also proven that he can play without the ball and still impact games. That he's the exact kind of guy another star would want to play with.
And the reason their cap gets much cleaner after from that year is that Ben Simmons comes off. Mm-hmm. So they could make a Ben Simmons move with their draft capital and take on money, and then all of a sudden that doesn't happen. I'm not saying that like they're married to that timeline, but it's worth keeping an eye on as they make moves over this next year. So
look, until Giannis's future is decided, all this stuff is worth keeping an eye on.
Agreed. Okay. Thank you for talking about this. Pretty soon we're going to have real lot of stuff to talk about. I think we're just sort of entertaining ourselves at this point. Although I seem to be getting aggregated more than ever. All right. Thank you to Jackson, our producer. Thank you to McMahon. Thank you to Bontemps. Thank you, Listen to Collective Podcast, and we'll talk to you in a few days.
Adios, amigos.